court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
Tommy, today's episode has been talked about on our Facebook page a couple different times, and I thought it was very appropriate because it's about Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA. Now, another slang term for that is a sunshine law.
And the sunshine law. Shining sun where the sun don't shine.
That's right. And you look like you got plenty of sun on you.
Oh, yeah. I just got back from the beach.
You do. You got a kick and tan.
Well, we had a great time down there. The weather was beautiful on the Isle of Palms.
The weather was
sound beautiful.
The weather is here. I wish you were beautiful.
Yeah, that's right. quote our good friend Jimmy Buffett. Now we met him in person. We can call him a close personal friend, can't we?
Oh, so you stay at the Isle of Palms, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We were going to Charleston, South Carolina, and Isle of Palms is evidently a separate entity in and of itself just outside of Charleston. It's across the bridge, and it's just a thin sliver of land that one side is ocean and the other side is lagoon, I guess.
Like a causeway that connects them?
Yeah. You got to go over two great big bridges. They are awesome spans.
Yeah.
If you were an engineering person, you'd want to see both these bridges. They are phenomenal. But it was just an absolutely beautiful place. The beaches were great. We were right on the ocean. A nice house, best house we've ever stayed in. We liked it so much, we already signed up, made reservations for another house that was about three doors down for next year.
Oh, awesome.
It's just great. It had great restaurants and shops within walking distance of where we were. Just beautiful.
Well, I'm glad you had a nice vacation and you got some sun.
Next year, it's going to be Casa Margarita.
Casa Margarita?
That's the name of it.
Oh, it actually
is? There's a
is?
Company that owned three of them there, and that was one of the three. And we like that one best, so we've already signed up for that one.
That means House of Margarita.
Yeah, I figured Jimmy's got to come down and stay with us at least one night if we're in the House of Margarita.
You should extend the offer.
I tried to get Justin to do it this year just to see what would happen.
You never know.
Might be touring through the area and spend the night with us.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right.
I think Michael Jordan said that, didn't he?
That's probably somebody like that.
Yeah, probably. So this episode is on Freedom of Information Act, and it was suggested a couple different times on our Facebook page. Melissa Allen most recently quoted about it, and then Christine O'Neill, I guess she's a federal employee that responds to Freedom of Information Act requests quite a bit, and so she's chimed in on this several times. Charles Greenman, Jason Freeman, and Jen Pauley all over the course of our podcast career have suggested something kind of along the lines of Freedom of Information Act. So,
wow, that's a lot of people wanting information about it.
Yeah. So they
filed their own Freedom of Information Act on us to do the information on the Freedom of Information Act. Is that right?
That's so meta.
Yeah.
Yeah, to a certain degree. So now the Freedom of Information Act, like everything else we talk about, is kind of different than what you might think if you don't know anything about it. The actual Freedom of Information Act is contained in 5 U.S.C. 552, and that is with regards to any information that pertains to the federal government. And so we're talking about the U.S. federal government, not state governments. Each state, for the most part, has their own kind of different Freedom of Information Act. And they're kind of the same and do basically the same purpose, but they're just different. So if you want something from a state agency, it's going to be different based upon which state you are and what the agency is. So now the amendment was actually signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson on July 4th, 1966, and went into effect the following year.
How patriotic.
I don't think he was really a fan of it, though. I think he didn't. I think it was some of those political things that he kind of had to do.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
It's my understanding. Well, you got to remember, it was a different time. There was a lot of government secrets back then.
That was before we knew about the aliens and Area 52 and all that kind of stuff, huh?
Area 52?
Yeah.
I think you're one ahead of me.
I'm one ahead of you. Is Area 51?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted the other area right next to it.
Maybe that's the whole problem with all these... I got some land on the other side of Area 51, on the good side.
I'll sell it to you cheap.
But maybe that's why all the Freedom of Information requests about Area 51 have failed.
Because it's Area 52?
Yeah.
It's, nothing happened in 51. That's the government cover-up.
Yeah.
And it does say, as part of it, you got to be specific in your request.
Yeah.
You can't just issue a blanket general request. You have to be specific and outline what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's right, because there's a lot of information out there that the federal government has, so you got to be pretty specific about what it is you're looking for.
They got too much. They got more than what they know what to do with.
They got too much stuff. So basically, the way it came into effect was that there were concerns that the previous disclosure thing, the Administrative Procedure Act, which was enacted in 1946, it gave agencies a lot of discretion about like withholding information. And so the problem people thought was that basically this Information Act was actually more of a way to conceal information than provide information. So they wanted to pass something, Congress wanted to pass something that basically implemented a general philosophy of full agency disclosure. So hence the Freedom of Information Act was passed in 1966.
You think it had anything to do with the Kennedy assassination cover-up?
It might have.
People were putting forth all those theories already about what really was behind it and who really did it and all that kind of stuff.
It's a weird part of our history, that era.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the 60s, there's a lot of stuff going on. You get the Vietnam War, you got all kinds of weird experimentation. A
lot of assassinations.
Assassinations, sex, drugs.
Rock and roll.
Amen.
They probably investigated, like, you know, Led Zeppelin or something like that.
Probably. They were checking out their houses as they're holy.
Bunch of damn hippies.
The amendment basically makes all federal agencies publish the rules of their procedure about how you make a request in the Federal Register. And basically, they have to make available for public inspection, copying their opinions, statements of policy, interpretations, staff manuals, instructions, and anything that basically they have, unless there's some sort of exception. Every agency, basically, upon any request for records which reasonably describe such records, to make such records promptly available to any person. So, if an agency actually withholds any of the documents, the federal district court has jurisdiction to order them to produce them. So that's where the jurisdictionally, if they don't follow through with what they're supposed to do, you would file a lawsuit in federal district court to make them do it.
I would just say, if you got into that kind of issue with the federal government as far as getting records and they wouldn't give you what you wanted, you're not going to end up, even if you win that, you're not going to end up very well off, because then they'll give them to you and they'll be redacted with everything but the title or something like that.
Well, that's
true. Because they have the choice to redact these things before they release them.
That's true. But if you file a lawsuit against them, it actually places the burden on the agency to show why they shouldn't give it to you. So it's not like you have to say why you need it or anything like that, because you're entitled to it already under the act. So they have to say why you shouldn't get it. It's one of those kind of burden shifting type things. That, not what you would think.
Burden shifting.
Burden shifting.
Easy for you to say. It's burden shifting. That's what it is. It's burden shifting. I protest.
Now, one of the main people that brought this law into effect was a certain congressman named Johnny Moss. Not Johnny Moss. John E. Moss.
John E. Moss.
Yep, and he was from California. And fittingly enough, he was the chairman of the Government Information Subcommittee.
A rolling John gathers no moss.
And evidently, this had become a bit of his opus because it took him 12 years to get this basically through Congress.
It's the only thing he ever did.
Yeah.
But by God, he did it.
That's all he's known for.
He was he was a hippie that got his hair cut and cleaned up so he could get elected and get in there and free up all this information. We infiltrated the government.
He saw his way in there so he could basically get that information.
That's right. Shine that sunshine in there.
It said that a lot of his desire was based upon his time on the Government Information Subcommittee, that he saw a bunch of stuff and he was like, we need to let the public know about this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of basically, people think that was his desire to want to let more sunshine in like that. So
he was, what you're saying is, maybe he was somebody that was trying to do the right thing instead of just treat all the rest of us populace, the voters, like we're a bunch of idiots and they know better than us.
Yeah, pretty much.
If the population knew what was going on here, they would not be happy with you fellers.
They also reviewed the whole confidential and top secret and all that kind of stuff, too, and changed the classification, so not everything was kind of carte blanche
top secret.
So they actually went through and tried to shed a little sunshine on the on there.
Well, they also put some years on there, didn't they, where they said after so many years, certain things kind of lose that classification. I mean, you know, what's top secret 25 years ago would not necessarily be top secret now.
That's true. Yeah, that was part of the whole over-scheming thing about getting information released to the public. That's why periodically you hear about different kinds of documents that are going to be released in at a certain time, like something that happened a long time ago. It's like, Oh, now it's been released.
Well, that's actually part of the Freedom of Information Act, is there are certain documents that are now on a schedule to be released, even if nobody requests them.
Yeah. And that's part of the thing, too, is that each of these different agencies that have this information, they actually put it on their websites for the most part and it becomes public information. So you don't actually have to do a request for it. It's just listed on their website.
And some are available in reading rooms.
Ooh, on microfiche.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say fiche.
Fiche.
You know all about microfiche. Fiche.
I do. That was how our business started, doing microfilm, microfiche.
At Tridata.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's where we started. Of course, we had to phase it all out. It fell by the wayside. Digital took the place.
I remember going into the library at Marshall and having to do research and pulling out a microfilm and running film through those machines. If you wanted to print it, then you had to like hit a button, and it was like, I think it actually took a picture of the microfilm and then printed it.
Yeah.
So it was very strange technology.
That's what it was.
I think
microfilm's supposed to last for 100 years.
I don't know if I've ever, last 100 years?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
If properly maintained, I mean, you can't keep it out in the elements, but if you keep it in a climate-controlled room, it's supposed to be good for 100 years.
A climate-controlled room such as ones that you offer at Tridata?
Correct.
Hey.
At a slightly higher rate than what we offer our regular storage. So come by and see us with your microfiche.
I don't know if I've told this story.
Advertisement paid for by Tridata.
I don't know if I've told this story before on this podcast, but actually I am a former employee of Tridata at one point.
Yeah, you were a head staple puller.
That's right. I went to work for your dad. I was working as a lifeguard at the pool, and it had been an especially crappy summer. It was really hot and nasty, and I had a new boss, and I didn't like him, and he was having me on the on my hands and knees walking along the cracks in the on the pavement with a screwdriver pulling out grass and picking up cigarette butts out of there, and I was like, this is not what I signed on to do as a lifeguard. Like, I'll go out and cut some grass or something like that, but no, I'm not really down for this whole picking up cigarette butts and scraping cracks for grass with screwdrivers.
I'll scrape my own cracks. I don't exactly. Scrape somebody else.
So an eager, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed Michael Meadows went to Mr. Dan Smurl, your father, and he hired me as a head staple puller at Tridata. So my job was, prior to the micro filming that took place, I had basically a huge box full of files, and I would go through with a staple remover and just remove staples for 8 hours a day.
And paper clips.
And paper clips, too, whatever the job called for.
So that then the people doing the microfilming could just handle just loose paper.
That's right.
And go through there.
I did the prep work.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we have a whole list of family members who went through Tridata.
That's right.
So you worked there, our nephew Charles.
That's right.
Worked there. He's now a doctor. Taylor worked there for a while.
That's right.
And so did Katie.
Yeah.
Our niece Katie, she worked there for a little while.
And Justin kind of worked out of there for a while.
Well, Griffin did.
Well, oh yeah, Griffin did work there, didn't he?
Yeah, Griffin. Then he chose to go to Bonnaroo and blew us off. He came back and I had to fire the boy.
Didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I felt I owed it to him.
That's right. Straighten him up. Look at the man he is today. I put him on the 30 under 30 list.
He's a media luminary.
That's right. I straightened him up, didn't I?
You fired a media luminary.
That's right. And if you saw the TV show, I had to fire Travis before I ever hired him because he wanted a beer.
That was a trick question, though.
That's right.
So now each, as I said, each different agency is required to maintain a website, they all have websites, but they're required to maintain a page on their website which lists how to obtain information from them. So it's kind of like a procedure thing. So if you want to go to a certain government agency and see what they have, you go to their website, you find out how you request from them specifically, and that's how you do it. So requesting it like something from OSHA might be slightly different than requesting it from something other than OSHA.
Well, and the first thing you have to do when you want information, you have to figure out what agency has it. because there is no universal database. It's not like the Office of Government Information or something that you can go to and get it. Whatever it is you're looking for is under some different department in the government somewhere.
Yeah, and some of them don't make much sense.
Yeah, and if you go and you ask for it, they can just simply say, that's not us. And they don't even have to tell you who it is or figure it out. You got to figure it out. So that's the first thing you got to do is figure out what department you need to go to.
Yeah.
That may be the end of your request right there, finding the right department.
Yeah, just getting started can be hard. Yeah. But with today's technology and websites, you can kind of buzz through things pretty quickly and figure stuff out, as long as you keep your head on a swivel.
They will give you a list of departments and contact numbers, so you can start making phone calls to try to, if you want it that bad, they will give you the information to try to get there.
Now, like I said, each website in each department basically has information on there that's already released and is public. Mm-hmm. And so if it's public information, you don't need to do any kind of Freedom of Information Act on it. Basically, all you have to do is just look at the information because it's already there.
Go to the website.
Go to the website. Look it up. Like one example I saw was that if you go to like the OSHA website, which stands for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, you don't have to request which business has the worst health and safety records. That they already published that data, so you can just find it there. So it'd be kind of silly to do an information request on that because it's already out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of records that are forced to be public. NTSB records.
Yeah.
FRA records.
What's in the black box?
Are we Brad Pitt, or are we talking about a train or a plane?
Or an automobile.
Difference.
Or an automobile.
Yeah, well, the automobile. Well, I guess they do have kind of a black box these days.
I think they do.
So they can reconstruct some of that stuff.
Now, we have some other stuff to talk about with regard to Freedom of Information Act, but we need to give you some information here because I think we have some motions before the court.
Yes, your FOIA ship.
FOIA ship?
Yeah, is that how you say that? FOIA, FOIA?
Yeah, I think so. That's how people... Let me do a little honesty here. Let's get real. A little real talk. You can't see, but I just turned my chair around. I'm sitting in it backwards. Turn my hat around backwards, too.
That's how you talk to teenagers.
That's right. I've actually never done a FOIA request, so.
Well, that's okay. Me neither.
Yeah. Well, to the federal government, I actually have done some state-based ones, and I've answered some state-based ones, too, so.
Hmm.
Anyway.
You're like the Wikipedia of the state-based answers?
I don't really know what that means, but maybe. Anyway, enough about that that real talk. Who's on the docket today?
Well, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs. Today we have Sleep Number, the fine mattresses we've all come to know and love.
Now, let me tell you something. Sleep is important.
Boy, I'll say.
Yeah, totally. And your mattress makes a big difference.
Big difference.
I think I started realizing how important sleep was when I was a young athlete trying to recuperate from the day's training.
Well, I can tell you this. I don't just sleep because it's necessary. I sleep because I like it.
Oh, me too.
I mean, I don't ever feel like I can get enough sleep.
I had I worked late last night till about, I don't know, 7:30. Got home, took a power nap for about an hour, and I managed to feel refreshed and then went out and played a indoor soccer game. Felt great after that. But I'll tell you what, that nap in between my work and soccer game was luxurious.
Luxurious. Felt great. Well, yes. That night-long sleep, though, that good, deep sleep that you get each night, that's what really resets your body and makes you prepared for the next day. And that's where Sleep Number comes in.
You got to get those REMs.
That's right. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is designed to help you achieve a better quality sleep. This is not a bed. It's an entire slumber environment.
That's right. Now, the new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is designed to keep you effortlessly comfortable. It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping blissfully through the night.
So many couples disagree on mattress firmness.
Among other things.
That's right.
In pronunciation of the word mattress.
Mattress. Mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's just right for both of you because you both need correct firmness.
That's true. At a Sleep Number store, you can see and feel how the bed contours to you and release pressure points with their individual fit technology. It's comfort you have to feel.
And that's a trademark thing, individual fit.
That's right.
I can't think of anything better than having a bed contour to me.
That's right.
It's just like being packed in there, like a packing peanut type thing.
and you'll only find Sleep Number at Sleep Number Store. Come in now and see the newest Sleep Number 360 smart beds, now from $999.
There are more than 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Just visit sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you.
That's sleepnumber.com/court.
And Mike and Tommy say, have a good night's sleep and sweet dreams. Well, one of the things to keep in mind when drafting an FOIA request, that's what we in the biz call them, or FOIA, is that there may be a cost involved.
Oh, yeah.
They have the right to charge you for these things. And what I really thought was funny, not funny, haha, funny, interesting, is that if you're a commercial agency requesting this information, you might most likely will get the request for free. But if you're an individual requesting this information, unless you have a really good reason, you're probably going to have to pay something for it. Now, in some cases, it's just copying charges, which are set at, you know, 10 cents a page or 25 cents a page or something like that. But in other ones, depending on the information, they may come up with processing fees and search fees and everything else. It may run into thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and basically the standard is, and this, again, differs by each different agency because they'll have their own slightly different procedure.
Correct.
But for the most part, if you make a FOIA request, you've kind of agreed to pay fees up to about $25. That's kind of like the threshold. And if it's more than that, usually they'll go ahead and ask you and say, hey, this is going to cost $50. Are you sure you want to go through with this? So they've kind of put that $25 mark to be the threshold.
Yeah, well, it says the Act provides that agencies may charge different fees depending on who's requesting the information. Commercial users pay reasonable standard charges for document search, review, and duplication. Education or non-commercial scientific institutions and representatives of the news media may only be charged for reasonable duplication costs, 10 to 25 cents per page. All other users may be charged for document search and duplication, except for commercial users. The first 2 hours of search time and the first 100 pages of copying are always free.
Oh, commercial users, the first 2 hours are free. Now, the way they determine what the search and review costs are basically calculated generally off the pay scale of the person who's conducting the search for you, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So if you have like some super highly technical type information that somebody who has to be super smart and talks real good needs to look for, then it's going to cost you more.
Well, I saw one where this dealt with like model boats or planes or something like that. And some guy had made a complaint to this model company that he didn't think that the model was an exact replica of the boat or plane or whatever, the military boat or plane that they were doing. So the model company sought a Freedom of Information Act to get the exact plans to that boat or plane so they could make their model more realistic. And the branch of the military that it was under came back and said, well, that's this type of engineering and this type of that. And it was several thousand dollars that they were running into for their cost to duplicate these plans so that they could make a model of it.
This model must be accurate. Accept no substitute. That sounds like I can imagine several of our family members doing things like that with regard to their models.
Yeah. Well, I used to build models. I was an adamant model builder when I was a kid. I had all kinds of them.
Really?
Yeah. Then finally I got tired of them. I took them out back and shot them with a BB gun, watched them blow up, or blew them up with firecrackers. I did some of that too.
Yeah, you always told me those stories whenever I had my G.I. Joes out about blowing up your models and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think you were trying to talk me into doing it, and I never wanted to do it.
No, you always liked yours too much.
Yeah, I'm like, no, it's my favorite G.I. Joe. Yeah. He's got a family to think about.
And I won't. We'll shoot it with the BB gun. It'll just leave a little mark. Don't worry about it.
I never shot my G.I. Joes. I'd only shoot those big cowboy and Indian type figurines I had.
Yeah, those big plastic ones.
Yeah.
I had big soldier ones. I had Germans, Japanese, and Americans. See, I was older. That was the war in those days.
Back in those days.
Back in those days. Now, if you think that you're being charged and you shouldn't be, there is a way around it. If you can make a reasonable argument that the information you're requesting is either A, in the public interest, or B, benefits the government, then they are likely to waive all fees for your request. I'm not sure exactly who requests information that's for the good of the public or to benefit the government and make them look good. But if you do that, and you can convince them you're doing that, then you might get it for free.
Well, I came across an article which was talking about the CIA, which they have to respond to FOIA requests because not everything they do is top secret. But basically, there was a memo that went out in 1978, and it talked about what they felt were the six most dangerous FOIA topics. This is I guess probably a memo which was actually probably released because of FOIA about what the most dangerous FOIA requests were. Again, very meta. Number one was Project MK Ultra, which was that mind control, basically CIA program that went on.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know much about it. I've seen it mentioned a couple times in different movies and TV shows and things like that.
That George Clooney movie, something like Men That Stare at Goats or something like that?
Yeah, I suppose that's based on that.
Yeah.
And drug use and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
The Glomar Explorer. So the Hughes Glomar Explorer was this large salvage vessel built by the CIA, and they were trying to salvage part of a Soviet submarine that had gone down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so in
the hunt for Red October.
Kind of, yeah. And so the Los Angeles Times had kind of caught wind of that, and they had a story they were going to publish, and basically the CIA wanted to try to stop that from coming out because they were trying to keep the secret. And so basically the person who wrote the story had requested the CIA to provide some sort of disclosure about the Glomar project and its attempts to censor the story. And the CIA said that we can neither confirm nor deny and wanted to keep the project's existence quiet. And so basically the reporter's FOIA request was rejected. Although once there was some change in the administration, it kind of softened a little bit. But when you hear somebody talk about a Glomar response, That's where that comes from. Yeah. So it actually comes from a FOIA request.
I can't say I've ever heard of a Glomar response, but
oh, really?
Now if I hear one, I'll know.
I've heard about it before at some point. I can't remember where. I don't know why.
Were you looking for a nuclear sub that was lost?
Like Red October?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I may have read in a book somewhere. We'll go with that.
All right. Sounds good.
The number three requested from the CIA was the USS Liberty event. And it said, because of the partial and unevaluated disclosures, the public has reached a conclusion that is contrary to the one arrived at all if the material is taken into account.
I think I remember the USS Liberty event.
That was, I think, one of
our ships got boarded by some other, by another country's people for some reason or something. And our people were taken prisoner, I think.
And basically, it was an attack on the USS Liberty by the Israeli Air Force. And it was during the Six-Day War back in 1967, and it killed 34 crew members and wounded 171 and damaged the ship.
I knew it was something like that. I couldn't remember exactly. I was thinking somebody boarded it, but so the Israelis sank one of our ships, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
They're on our side.
They are.
We're on their side. Something went wrong. It was a Six-Day War. On the seventh day, they rested.
As it was written. And basically, the CIA kind of investigated that to see kind of what took place. And there's been tons of requests about that because they want to know, you know, why it happened. Was this some sort of planned type attack or whatnot? So that's one of those type things that you can imagine there would be a lot of requests about why that took place.
Yeah.
Number four, the Berlin Tunnel Operation, where the CIA and MI6 were going to tunnel under the Berlin Wall and try to tap into Soviet communication lines. Be a pretty interesting one to hear
that
about.
Sounds like a good one. Get a bunch of moles and put them out in front, digging along through there. Herd the moles under. The animal kind, not the intelligence kind.
Or the face kind.
Yeah, you don't want one of those. Those don't do much digging.
Number five was the Apollo affair, where evidently there was some diversion of nuclear material from the NUMEC plant in Apollo, Pennsylvania, to Israel, where it was used to help develop nuclear weapons. So people wanted to find out about that.
Oh, I thought it was about how the moon landing was faked.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
No.
From that title, that's what I thought you were referring
Apollo,
to.
Apollo, Pennsylvania. Hmm. And then number six is probably the one you can guess, the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah, that one's the one that had a whole lot of interest.
Yeah, there's been a lot of requests about that kind of information.
Those documents were held for quite a while, like 40 years or something before they were released, weren't they?
They were, yeah. And I think a bunch of them were just released fairly recently.
Yeah.
But then some are still classified.
Yeah. Well, I think that then probably one of the other big requests that it is about UFOs.
Yeah, Area 52.
Yeah, that's right.
And 51.
Yeah, 49 might even be in there.
I don't know.
You know, but one of the things that they do also have a time limit on answering these things.
Yeah.
And of all the things the government does, I actually thought this was pretty reasonable. They have 20 business days to respond back to you about your request. That's pretty reasonable when you consider the government.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
That's 4 weeks, but that's still pretty quick, I think.
I'd say so, too. I mean, that's a quick response. I mean, you got to think, if you're very specific about what you want and you go to the right agency, it shouldn't take that long for them to search through and find that. Especially if they have a whole department set up for this.
Yeah, but I picture that most of them are like whatever that creature was that sat up in the window in Monsters U. Remember the Wachowski? Are you here today? Whatever that one was, you know. I figure they're all like her, you know, smoking cigarettes and sitting there, I'll get to it when I can. So you don't expect much of a speedy response from that. You know what I'm talking about? Monsters. Wasn't that right? Monsters U, not Monsters U. What was the first one? Monsters Inc.
Never saw it.
You never saw Monsters, Inc.?
No, that's why I was just kind of nodding in agreement.
Do you not have kids?
No.
Oh, well, that might be why.
No kids, just skip straight to teenagers.
You know what I'm talking about with Sully and Mike Wachowski?
No.
You don't? The one-eyed, the green one-eyed creature?
I mean, I'm aware there is a movie called Monsters, Inc.
Oh, okay.
I know there are presumably monsters in it.
Yeah.
I guess they run some sort of company.
Yeah, Billy Crystal, well, they're part of the company, yeah. They're scaring people, and then they build up their reserves for their screams and stuff like that. But anyway, you're going to have to watch it sometime.
Does it make any sense?
It does if you watch it. You go through doors. There's a lot of doors. Not the singing doors, either. But anyway.
Let's break on through to the other side of what you're getting at here.
Billy Crystal plays Mike Wachowski, and John Goodman is Sully, the big friend.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's a good movie. You should watch it sometime. But anyway,
I will.
You saw the lady up in the front window that is always giving Mike Wachowski a hard time. That's how I picture all our government employees that are in charge of giving out information.
They'll get to it when they get to it.
That's right.
But it's contrary to what the actual practice is.
Yeah. Like I said, 20 business days, that's a pretty good turnaround.
Yeah. Now, as we said, each state has their own different kind of Freedom of Information Act. In Florida, it's called like the Sunshine Law or Government in the Sunshine. And there's like this whole manual they put out every year to tell you how you are to comply with these different kinds of requests. When I was an attorney in Florida, one of my clients, actually several of my clients, were government entities. So periodically they would get these Sunshine Law type requests, and I would have to help work with them and figure out how to properly respond to it. And they didn't really have the whole 20-day thing, but I think the Florida law basically says you have to respond in a reasonable amount of time, and about 20 days was deemed to be the reasonable amount of time. So kind of the same thing. And with regards to litigation in Florida, I know I've done sunshine requests from governments too to find out information about something, some case I might have, because it's actually much faster than doing a discovery request. So if you actually are suing a government entity, you might do a Freedom of Information Act request before you file a lawsuit, or maybe even after you file a lawsuit, because it's just much faster than a discovery request going through the courts, and they have to give it to you.
Yeah.
If you file a discovery request in a court case, they might object to it or whatever, but they can't really do that with regard to a Freedom of Information Act. So it's kind of a little practice tip or strategic point there for all you lawyers out there.
I think in West Virginia, they call it Buried Under the Pile of Coal Act.
Buried Under the Pile of Coal.
Well, we get that for you, but it's buried under that pile of coal. Billy Bob, get over here and get that pile of coal moved so we can get that information for this feller. He's got one of them there for you things.
Is that how everybody in West Virginia sounds?
Pretty much.
I'm actually kind of offended.
Me too. I offended myself.
West Virginia actually does not call it the Under the Coal Act. It's called the West Virginia Open Governmental Proceedings Act.
Well, and isn't there a neat acronym to go along with that?
Not really. And then there's
Vagogpuck.
The West Virginia Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
Well, VFIA.
VFIA.
So we have our own.
VFIA, you too.
We have our own here as well. So
now, there are 9 things that are exempted from Federal Information Act.
What are those?
National defense, number one, national defense or foreign policy information properly classified pursuant to an executive order.
Got a few executive orders out there.
Number two, documents related solely to the internal personnel rules and practices of an agency.
Yeah, so some like somebody's personnel file?
Well, and the rules and practices of an agency. So they don't have to tell you how they operate.
Mm.
Because if you give out how they operate, then you could undermine the agency. So they don't want to give that information out. Number three, documents specifically exempted from disclosure by statute, other than Freedom of Information Act, but only if the other statute's disclosure prohibition is absolute.
Mm.
So there can be statutes that say certain things are not under this.
Yeah, so like the blueprints for a nuclear facility.
Something like that, yeah.
Probably specifically excluded.
I would think so.
Let's hope.
Number four, documents which would reveal trade secrets and commercial or financial information obtained from a person and privileged or confidential. So like if a guy from Coke gave up the recipe, they can keep that. They don't have to release it.
That's interesting you say that because I was going to use that same example.
Well, great minds think alike, huh?
That's right.
Let's see. Number five, documents which are interagency or intra-agency memorandums or letters which would be privileged in civil litigation.
Yeah, so the privilege in civil litigation, for most part, is like your attorney-client type communications or something that was prepared in anticipation of litigation would be something that was privileged as well. So,
So even though it's a government document that was prepared by government people, if it's interagency or intra-agency, then it doesn't have to be released.
Yeah, if it fits that criteria.
Number six, documents which are personnel and medical and similar files that the disclosure of which would constitute a clearly unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. So I guess that's kind of like HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
Number seven, documents which are records of or information compiled for law enforcement purposes, but only if one or more of six specified types of harm would result. The specified types of harm are, it provides for the withholding of a law enforcement record, the disclosure of which would reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is, allows the withholding of information that would deprive a person of a right to a fair trial or an impartial adjudication. Next one is, recognizes that individuals have a privacy interest in information maintained in law enforcement files. The next one's protects the identity of confidential sources, information which could reasonably be expected to reveal the identity of a confidential source is exempt from disclosure. So we never found out who Deep Throat was. Actually, we did, but he revealed himself, I guess.
Yeah.
Next one is protects from disclosure information which would reveal techniques and procedures for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions, or that would disclose guidelines for law enforcement investigations or prosecutions if disclosure of the information could reasonably be expected to risk circumvention of the law. Again, you don't want to give them your policies and practices to give them an advantage in circumventing what you'll do or whatever. It might be something where you draw a line in the sand. Look, we're not going to cross this. We won't do this. So then the guy will do that just so he can get on the other side of that line.
Yeah.
And the last part of that is protects law enforcement information which could reasonably be expected to endanger the life or physical safety of any individual. Courts have interpreted this exemption as affording protection of the names and identifying information of federal employees and third persons who may be unknown. Then number eight, documents which are related to specific reports prepared by, on behalf of, or for the use of agencies which regulate financial institutions. And the last one, documents which would reveal oil well data. The ninth FOIA exemption covers geological and geophysical information, data, and maps about wells. It is rarely used. That's what it says.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, we can't let anybody know where our oil wells are. They might go blow them up, or some hillbilly might shoot him while he's hunting raccoons or something, or rabbits or something.
Texas tea.
Yeah.
They might
black gold.
They might sink their straw lower and drink their milkshake up.
That's right. Have their pipe go down and bend it over and stick it into your pile.
That's right.
So you don't have to disclose that.
I don't think you should have to.
All's well that ends well in your oil well. Now, sometimes people abuse these things, though.
No.
Yes, there are people who will do that.
I can't believe it.
So, with the Freedom of Information Act comes some very strange things that have been revealed and some very strange requests. One, for instance, that was requested later was a fan letter from J. Edgar Hoover to his favorite athlete. Even though he was a busy man, J. Edgar Hoover was not too busy to take in the occasional baseball game. And he would write fawning letters to his favorite players. A 1938 letter was written. I've never heard of this guy. He was a Cincinnati Red. Johnny Vandermeer.
Don't know him.
He was a famous Cincinnati Red. Probably somebody from Cincinnati knows who he was. He came fresh off of back-to-back no-hitters against the Boston Bees and the Brooklyn Dodgers. Didn't know there was a Boston Bees.
I did not.
After congratulating Vandermeer on the feat, Hoover writes, "I thought you might be interested in knowing that last year the Federal Bureau of Investigation won the U.S. Government League Championship."
Just to let you know.
But laments that unfortunately we do not have any Johnny Vandermeers who are able to turn in two no-hit games within 5 days.
That's pretty funny.
A list of 2,000 personalized Florida license plate requests reviewed for obscene material. So somebody wanted to see the list of the ones that were reviewed and rejected.
That's awesome.
So they went through all that, and it said, in 2011, the Miami New Times used a FOIA request to get their hands on a list of over 2,300 personalized license plates deemed in need of review for possible objectionable content. The list ranges from the destined for failure drunk, D-R-U-N-K, which was roundly rejected, to every form of sexual wordplay imaginable. The board was split on success. To the hilariously immature poop, that got the thumbs down, while Poopy One was approved.
That was the guy's last name.
You think so? Poopy Maybe. One?
I wonder if...
he had a kid and it was Poopy Two.
I wonder if a new start was... That was declined.
New start?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
A-N-U-S-T-R-T.
Oh.
A new start?
I think I know what you're getting at, but it would depend on how you block the letters, I guess. Make it all one word. There was an agreement between the United States Navy and the makers of the movie Battleship. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah.
It was based off of the board game.
Yeah.
And had battleships and aliens and everything. But somehow, the United States Navy had to make an agreement that they would depict the Navy in a very good light. And they had final say-so over the sequences to make sure that they were. But apparently, they didn't want anybody to really know that they were involved in it. So they wanted that kept secret, but they got it released. And one of the things that the Navy also secured... a minimum of 10 DVD copies of the movie, and special thanks on the credits and a private screening in Washington.
That movie was not very good.
I don't think it was either.
No. I remember the preview came on, I was like, really? That's where we're going with this?
Number four was FCC complaints about inappropriate content on South Park. That since debuting the cries of public outrage in 1997, South Park has gained a reputation for being able to get away with pretty much anything. It could be that the public forgives the show's over-the-top profanity because it's also smart, funny, and frequently insightful. Or more likely, people who watch it know what to expect. But there was one slightly confused citizen who wrote, "You may expect something like this on HBO, Showtime, etc., but not on the Comedy Channel." And then another decided on a fair punishment for creators Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They should be fined $6,000 per word.
How much?
You come up $6,000 per word. I don't know how you come up with that. They made them release FBI's Twitter slang dictionary. FBI saw fit that they had to compile a dictionary of Twitter slang so they could monitor transmissions on Twitter and know what they were talking about. So... in a classic case of, is this seriously what our hard-earned tax dollars are going to do? The FBI maintained a glossary of internet abbreviations, instant messages for Twitter, as well as instant messages on Facebook and MySpace. You can make your own MySpace joke. Someone privy to the fact filed
Hi,
a FOIA request. A copy of all records and documentation available. All right. Considering the enemies of the states like ISIS and Al-Qaeda use Twitter and other forms of social media, it probably doesn't seem like the world's worst idea until you actually read the list, which includes shorthand for everything ranging from the harmless L8R, G8R.
Later Gator.
Later Gator. To the lifted from the pages of a crappy 90s sitcom, DEGT. Don't even go there.
I didn't have anything for that one.
To a direct reference to a 1997 Jennifer Love Hewitt movie.
What year?
1997 Jennifer Love Hewitt movie. See if you know this one. IKWYDLS.
I know we did last summer.
You got it. That was on the list. Why would they need to know that?
It's a good movie.
Number six, some not very revealing pictures of an FBI retirement party. Apparently, the news, they were talking about a local FBI agent, and they had a retirement party for him, and the news thought he was an upstanding citizen and wanted some pictures from the retirement party.
Mm-hmm.
So the FBI complied and sent him pictures from the retirement party, and there were white geographical things, geometrical. Geographical. Their heads were in other countries. Over their face, there was white crap over their face. geometrical designs over their faces of all the people at the party. So it's like, what, you think we're going to put these in the paper?
To conceal their identity?
Yeah, there was all the bodies and these things over their paper. So it was like a modern art exhibit or something like that. Another one that has been petitioned, the White House's beer recipe.
Hmm.
Did you know Obama had his own private beer recipe?
I did not know that.
When he got there, he decided that he wanted his own recipe, so he gave it to some brewers. He bought his own beer kit and gave it to them to brew, and they brew their own beer. It's a White House honey ale.
Huh.
And so the secret was kept for a while, and finally they released it on their website. And they said, so now you know the ingredients and how to do it, but you'll never be able to match the fact that it was tapped from the first ever beehive on the South Lawn.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he had his own
beer. Naturally sourced.
Yeah. FTC complaints against dating websites. Evidently, the biggest offender was Match.com. And the thing being that a lot of the people on there, what they're complaining about is they were predators. They were on there scamming people and getting people lonely hearts.
Trying to get information.
Yeah, well, getting information. Also, these lonely hearts. And they would send them a box of candy and I want to come to the United States to visit you. And really what they were doing was just trying to get money out of them. I got a sick relative.
Mm.
Oh, well, here, let me send you some money. And they were preying on people who were lonely.
Yeah.
And doing that was a lot of them. So that was a lot of it that went in. But some of them were really, besides the scam, some of them were just disgusted with the way it worked out. And this one lady wrote in, out of thousands of lesbians across the United States, nobody sent me a hello or a wonk. I think that means a wink. And wrote one frustrated eHarmony customer, I want my money refunded because my photos were loaded upside down.
And so there was FTC complaints about, and they wanted FOIA requests on that?
Yeah.
Wow.
There was an FBI profile of Jack the Ripper, about 100 years too late.
Yeah.
But they actually, because a movie that was being made, wanted to know what the FBI would profile him as. So the FBI did an actual profiling of him so that they could use that as part of the movie.
Huh.
And they even went as far as to initiate a scenario in which the FBI interrogates the killer, and they said Jack the Ripper would be best suited to be interviewed during the early morning hours. He would feel more relaxed and secure to confess his homicides. They actually spent time doing that, and they got him to release the papers on it. Now, the last one is 17 pages of correspondence poo-pooing a laugh-in sketch. Do you remember Laugh-In?
Yeah.
Ronan Martin's Laugh-In? Yeah. It was kind of like, back in its day, for those of you that aren't that old, it was like Saturday Night Live, but it was on primetime. It was the show that launched Goldie Hawn's career.
That was the one where they had the different boxes and squares. They opened their door and be like, hey, Goldie.
Yeah.
And she's like, wait, what?
Yeah. And they had Dan Rowan and Dick Martin hosted it, and Artie Johnson and Henry Gibson. They were some of the people that were on there, and that was like Saturday Night Live in its day. But when it aired in 68 through 73, the body jokes, drug references, and political satire made it one of the most controversial shows of its time. Richard Nixon once was on there. But what got them in trouble was their show's relationship with the United States government took a turn for the worse following a 1971 skit, which, according to FBI vault release document, featured cheerleaders who sang a fight song about the FBI. Several concerned Americans wrote letters of support to J. Edgar Hoover expressing their dissatisfaction, including one viewer who chides the show for making the FBI a target of undue ridicule and mockery. Another launches a two-front attack on the sketch, writing that the so-called jokes were not only not humorous, but did not make any sense. After being alerted, the FBI decided to settle on keeping a tape of the sketch maintained in the crime research section in the event the director wishes to hear it. So those are some of the crazier things that have come out of the Freedom of Information Act.
That we know of.
That we know of, yeah. Those are just the ones that were publicized.
We need to actually do a Freedom of Information request to find out what the actual craziest Freedom of Information requests were.
Well, the problem is, that's all subject to, you know, individual interpretation. I don't think we could get people to agree on, yeah, this is it.
This is crazy, man. Well, that's going to bring us to Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask you different legal terms we talked about. This one's probably going to be a pretty short legal brief because there's not really too many crazy legal terms we discussed. What does FOIA stand for?
Freedom of Information Act.
Zoom, bing, ding. Good job.
And it was passed into law July 4th of 1966, but didn't take effect until July 4th of 1967.
And who was the president that signed it?
Lyndon B. Johnson.
Good Lord.
LBJ. That's what we called him back in the day.
You've been taking some smart pills?
Yes, I have. And they're working. I may be a lawyer next week.
So, what is the Federal Register?
The Federal Register?
Yeah.
It's a newspaper in Kansas.
It is?
Sounds like it to me. There's a Federal Register somewhere. That's where it'd be.
Well, it may be, but it's actually the official journal of the federal government of the U.S. that contains government agency rules, proposed rules, and public notices. So basically all the FOIA procedures and whatnot are contained in the Federal Register.
Oh, okay.
So I mentioned that at one point, but...
But I failed to know it. Now my smart pill must be wearing off.
I glossed over it pretty quickly. That was probably an unfair one.
I'm getting buried back under that pile of coal.
What is the Florida version of the Freedom of Information Act?
Sunshine Law.
That's right.
Shine the sun where the sun don't shine.
You know, might not like what you see.
Everybody's got one.
And who... This is a bonus question. Who was the congressman that pushed the FOIA law through Congress?
Oh, it was... We made a joke about him.
We did?
We did.
The royal we?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, crap.
That man's name? Poopy One.
No, it wasn't Poopy One.
It's Poopy Two. No, it's John E. Moss.
Johnny Moss. Yeah, we said the moss doesn't roll. Rolling John gathers no moss.
Again with this joke. I sat there with my mouth open looking at you thinking, what? Well, anyway, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. You came out of the gate pretty strong there, but...
Yeah, I petered out at the end.
You definitely petered out there at the end.
I hate when that happens.
Petering out's not good.
As you get older, it happens more and more.
I want to see a doctor about that.
Just don't give out any information about it.
That's right. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I am just a dude.
Thanks for listening.